can wait for you, my girl says. I meet her gaze in the mirror. No, I say. You waited long enough. I love you, Jenna. I always have, and I always will. Just because you leave someone doesn't mean you ever let them go. Even when you couldn't see me, you knew deep down I was still there. And even when I can't see you, I say, my voice breaking, I'll know that too. The minute I say this, I no longer see her face, just Serenity's reflection next to mine. She seems shocked, empty. But Serenity isn't looking at me. She's gazing at a vanishing point in the mirror where Jenna is now walking, lanky and angular, all elbows and knees that she will never grow into. As she gets smaller and smaller, I realize that she's not heading away from me, but moving towards someone. I don't recognize the man who is waiting for her. He has close-cropped hair and wears a blue flannel shirt. It's not Gideon. I've never met this person before. But when he holds up a hand in greeting, Jenna waves back, excited. I do recognize the elephant standing beside him, however. Jenna stops in front of Mora, who wraps her trunk around my baby, giving her the embrace I can't, before they all turn and walk away. I watch. I keep my eyes wide open until I cannot see her anymore.
Jenna. Sometimes I go back and visit her. I go during the in-between time, when it's not night and it's not morning. She always wakes up when I come. She tells me about the orphans who have arrived at the nursery. She talks about the speech she gave to the wildlife service last week. She tells me about a calf that has adopted a little dog as a friend, just like Sarah did with Gertie. I think of these as the bedtime stories I missed. My favorite is a true tale about a man from South Africa who was called the Elephant Whisperer. His real name was Lawrence Anthony, and like my mother, he did not believe in giving up on elephants. When two particularly wild herds were going to be shot for the destruction they'd caused, he saved them and brought them to his game reserve to be rehabilitated. When Lawrence Anthony died, the two herds traveled through the Zululand bush for more than half a day and stood outside the wall that bordered his property. They had not been near the house in over a year. The elephants stayed for 2 days, silent, bearing witness. No one can explain how the elephants knew that Anthony had died. I know the answer. If you think about someone you've loved and lost, you are already with them. The rest is just details.
Author's note. Although this book is fiction, the plight of elephants worldwide is sadly not. Poaching for the commercial ivory trade has been increasing due to widespread poverty in Africa and the growing market for ivory in Asia. There are documented cases in Kenya, Cameroon, and Zimbabwe, in the Central African Republic, in Botswana, in Tanzania, and in the Sudan. There's a rumor that Joseph Kony funded his Ugandan resistance army with the illegal sale of ivory poached from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Most illegal shipments are sent across badly regulated borders to ports in Kenya and Nigeria, and shipped to Asian countries like Taiwan and Thailand and China. Although Chinese officials say that they have banned the trade of ivory products, Hong Kong authorities recently seized 2 shipments of illegal ivory from Tanzania, whose value totaled more than $2 million. Not long before this writing, 41 elephants were killed in Zimbabwe by poisoning their waterhole with cyanide, netting $120,000 worth of ivory. You can tell that an elephant society is being poached when the population dynamic becomes skewed. At the age of 50, The tusk of a male elephant will weigh more than 7 times that of a female, so males are always the first targets. Then poachers come for the females. The matriarch is the largest, often with the heaviest tusks. And when matriarchs are killed, they are not the only casualties. You have to figure in the number of calves that are left behind. Joyce Poole and Ian Douglas Hamilton are among the experts who have worked with elephants in the wild and who have dedicated themselves to stopping poaching and spreading awareness of the effects of the illegal ivory trade, including the disintegration of elephant society. Current estimates are that 38,000 elephants are being slaughtered each year in Africa. At this rate, elephants on that continent will all be gone in less than 20 years. Yet poaching is not the only threat to elephants. They are captured for sale to elephant-backed safaris, zoos, and circuses. Back in the 1990s in South Africa, when the elephant population grew too high, there was systematic culling. Entire families were darted from helicopters with scolene, which paralyzed them but did not render them unconscious. So they were fully aware as humans landed on the ground and moved systematically through the herd, shooting each elephant behind the ear. Eventually, the hunters realized that the calves would not leave their mothers' bodies, so they were staked to the corpses while the hunters got them ready for translocation. Some were sold abroad to circuses and zoos. It is those elephants that are sometimes lucky enough to end their lives of captivity at places like the Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, Tennessee. Although Thomas Metcalfe's New England Elephant Sanctuary is a fictional one, the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee is fortunately real. Moreover, the fictional elephants I created were all based on the true, heartbreaking stories of elephants from the Tennessee Sanctuary. Like Sira in this book, Tara the elephant had a constant canine companion. Wanda's real-life counterpart, Sissy, survived a flood. Lily was based on Shirley, who endured a ship fire and an attack that left her with a badly broken hind leg, due to which she still moves awkwardly. Olive and Dion, seen together throughout the book, are pseudonyms for the inseparable Misty and Dulari. Hester, the African elephant with an attitude, is based on Flora, who was orphaned in Zimbabwe as a result of mass culling. These ladies are the lucky ones, residents of only a handful of sanctuaries in the world dedicated to allowing elephants who have lived and worked in captivity to retire in peace. Their stories are only a tiny sample of those of countless elephants who are still being mistreated by circuses or kept in adverse conditions at zoos. I'd urge any animal lover to consider visiting www.elephants.com, the website for the Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, Tennessee. In addition to watching live elecams, be careful, you will lose hours of valuable work time. You can adopt an elephant, or make a donation in memory of an animal lover, or feed all the elephants for one day. No amount is too small, and all are so greatly appreciated. Please also visit the Global Sanctuary for Elephants, www.globalelephants.org, which is helping establish holistic, natural elephant sanctuaries worldwide. For those who would like to learn more about poaching and or elephants in the wild, or to contribute to those fighting to get international restrictions in place to prevent poaching, please visit www.elephantvoices.org, www.tusk.org, www.savetheelephants.org. Finally, I'd like to list the materials that were instrumental to me during the writing of this novel. Much of Alice's research was borrowed from the remarkable real-life studies and insights of these men and women. The Elephant Whisperer by Lawrence Anthony. Elephants on the Edge by G.A. Bradshaw. Growing Up Psychic by Chip Coffey. Among the Elephants by Ian Douglas Hamilton and Uriah Douglas Hamilton. How Animals Grieve by Barbara J. King. Elephant Memories by Cynthia Moss. The Amboseli Elephants, edited by Cynthia Moss, Harvey Crows, and Phyllis C. Lee. When Elephants Weep by Jeffrey Masayef Masson and Susan McCarthy. The Elephant's Secret Sense by Caitlin O'Connell. Coming of Age with Elephants by Joyce Poole. Love, Life, and Elephants by Daphne Sheldrick. And dozens of academic papers written by researchers who continue to study elephants and elephant society. There were many moments during the writing of this book when I thought that elephants may be even more evolved than humans, when I studied their grieving habits and their mothering skills and their memories. If you take away anything from this novel, I hope it is an awareness of the cognitive and emotional intelligence of these beautiful animals, and the understanding that it is up to all of us to protect them. Jodi Picco, September 2013. This is Rebecca Lohman. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Leaving Time by Jodi Picco. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Orlie Moskowitz. Text copyright 2014 by Jodi Picco. Production copyright 2014, Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.